Okay, and it's Friday night. Dr. Henry Nyman is stopping by to spend an hour with us to bring us up to date on the continuing and inexorable spread of the COVID-19 virus, which is moving all around the country. Remember, let's just round it off. I may be off a little here. Around 7 million, 8 million Americans have been found to test positive. What does that leave? 329 or 327 million hosts just waiting. This thing is going to run through the populace. There's no stopping it. It's too late. It's going to run through the planet. It's just going to be possibly indigenous now to the planet. That's just the way it's going to happen. So the numbers will continue to rise geometrically, or some say exponentially. They're going to be huge at some point. The latest on the virus front and its hoped-for vaccine is from Pfizer. The FDA gave Pfizer the green light to go ahead and experiment with its version of coronavirus, CV-19, vaccine on kids, little children, under the age of 12, I believe it is. So they're still at it. AstraZeneca apparently out of it now. J&J apparently out of it now. But don't count them out. There's too much money involved. They may be back. So whoever gets the winner in terms of the trials is going to profit very well. I continue to watch the Russian Sputnik V vaccine for negative side effects. I'm not seeing any yet. That's very interesting over there. Maybe Henry has more data on that than I do. But Henry, welcome back. There's a lot to cover in the last couple, 3 days. It's continuing, just as you forecasted.
Yeah, Jeff, it's actually accelerating. And not surprisingly, this is really the beginning of the fall wave. And it's going to have a significant impact on on pretty much everything in the upcoming days. And it's...
You can say that again. Henry, you can say that again. It's going to have a significant impact on pretty much everything in the coming days. Understand that. Everything.
Yeah, and just to be a little bit more specific, I think we should really start with this, because, like I say, it is going to be have a major impact. Today set an all-time high and beat the old record, which was set yesterday. And so yesterday it got, well, in my tally, it got up to 75,979 cases. Today it's at 81,759, and all the data is not in yet from California.
So 81 today. Wow. That's the first
Right. It's almost 82, and it's probably going to end up around 83 when California gets updated. The California data is only through, I think, 6:30 or so. So there's still a couple more hours worth of data in it. Anyway, even if there aren't any more from California, it is the first time it's got above 80,000. I had said last week that it would probably get up to 80,000 this week, it could get up to 90 or 100,000 next week. It's going up pretty dramatically. Just to give you a sense, and the reason it's so concerning is, A, it starts from a relatively high level, that the numbers really didn't get below 40,000, you know, when it dropped after the big peak from the states in the south, that it was being driven by Florida and Texas and California and initially Arizona. And then it kind of slowed down in those three states. And but even when it slowed down, it only got down to about 40,000 a day. And And now it started going up, and it's going up fairly quickly, and it's doubled that now. So it's up to 80,000 a day. These are, you know, during the week, it falls down on the weekends. So it'll be down tomorrow. It'll start back up again on Tuesday. And by a week from today, I would say 90 is likely, and 100,000 is possible. And it's not going to stop there. It's and just to give you an idea, you know, sometimes I read the list of the states that have 1,000 cases in, right, in a given day, and that would be a long list. I think there's 29 states that are 1,000 or more. But just to give the listeners a feel, here are the states that had 2,000 or more today. Pennsylvania, 2,219. California, 5,621. Michigan, 2,046. Illinois, 5,000. Florida, 3,689. Texas, 6,472. Georgia, 2,224. Ohio, 2,518. Indiana, 2,467. Tennessee, 3,606. North Carolina, 2,716. Missouri, 2,496. Alabama, 3,852. Wisconsin, 4,378. So those are the ones that had 2,000 or more. And if you notice, there's some with three, yeah, some with four, some with five. None of them at 10. I mean, that's the way it was in the last outbreak, that Florida, Texas, and California got up to 10,000 each. And that's what was driving the numbers. But when they dropped down, and they had dropped down to 2,000 or 3,000, then the numbers started to go down, and the other states picked up the slack somewhat, but they were in the 1,000 range. You know, occasionally got up to 2,000, and now it's kind of gotten to the fall. Some of this is being driven by schools, colleges. Some of these are driven by college towns. And there's been some tracing, looking at the sequences. The sequence can be used to kind of figure out where the virus came from. So there's some evidence that in some of these outbreaks, the students on campus are positive, and then the same person that's on campus is showing up in nursing homes and other residential areas, indicating that it's likely spreading from the university to the surrounding town. And others are, you know, I mentioned the Sturgis bicycle event, and there was a study that came out not too long ago that did tracing by looking at cell phone data.
Cell phones.
So it was,
yeah,
anonymous. They didn't know, you know, who the cell phone belonged to, but they could trace the cell phone, and they could see it go into Sturgis at the beginning of the celebration.
And 250,000 people were there.
Right, right.
A lot of
people. You know, most of them had a cell phone, so they could, they had a lot of data points, so they could see who drove into Sturgis at the beginning and who drove out. And then they could see where the ones that drove out went to. And they could identify those counties, and then they could look at the counties that had, you know, were overrepresented as far as receiving cell phones from Sturgis, and then they could look and see what the levels were like in those counties and compare to similar counties nearby. So they'd be able to pair them up and say, you know, county number one is, you know, 30 cell phones from the festival. County number two has two cell phones, but they're similar demographics, and then they could look at, you know, how many cases showed up in the next month or so in each of those counties. And so they could compare the counties with a lot of cell phone traffic from the festivals versus the ones with little or no traffic. And they saw dramatic increases, and they actually estimated that at the time, 20% of the cases in the entire country were linked to the surges. And if you look geographically, the two states that have the highest per capita incidence of COVID in the world are North and South Dakota. So, you know, these are states that, you know, they didn't make the list I read off because they've got around 700-800 cases a day, but they don't have a lot of population. And so when you break it down per person, they are number one and number two in the world as far as the frequency of COVID cases in the population. And they are number one and number two, and other countries in the north, really. They're Montana and Idaho. They're also sparsely concentrated case states, but they're kind of on a circuit up there where, you know, bikers from the Sturges would have gone to those states also. And so those states are highest percentage-wise, but they're certainly not the only states. There's a lot of states in the Midwest that are getting high numbers that aren't necessarily that frequent on the list I read off, because those are other states that are relatively sparsely populated, and so they're more in the 1,000 to 2,000 range rather than the 2,000 and above. But they're a high percentage, and they're states that you know were not in any of the, you know, 1,000 or higher lists you know, a month or two ago. So they're fairly recent development. And of course, the northern states are going to be the colder states. So they're going to be the states that are going to be spending more time indoors because it's getting cold outside, and you know, fall is coming, and winter's not that far behind. So number one, the numbers are starting to take off. And they're not localized. They're throughout the country. There's some concentrations, but they're not, you know, one or two or three cities or one or two or three states. It's really very widespread. It's starting to take off in Europe also. And this was predicted that the activity in the spring and the activity in the summer are what's commonly referred to as a herald wave. And that's a wave that's kind of heralding in the pandemic. And so you're getting activity, but it's not like it's everywhere at once. It's just getting a foothold and having an outbreak here and an outbreak there. And you get an initial curve, and it goes up, and then the curve goes back down. And that activity is really being misrepresented. Trump did his interview or debate yesterday. He did his interview with 60 Minutes, which is scheduled to air on Sunday. He had his own White House film crew there, so they took their own filming of the interview, and he released that on Facebook yesterday or the day before now. And so the full 37-minute uncut interview is available, and he basically was saying the same thing he says at all the rallies. You know, they're just, you know, basically false. And he says, and repeatedly he says that Oh, we've got more cases because we test more. You know, this is all a testing issue. And there were some outbreaks, but they kind of came and went. We had an outbreak in Arizona, and that peaked and it went down, and it peaked in Florida and it went down, and it peaked in Texas and it went down. And all those are true, but it's coming back in all of those states now. So, if you listen to the numbers I read off, Florida was a little bit lower today. It was around 5,000 yesterday. And Texas is in the 6,000 range, and California is in the 6,000 range. So they all dipped down to about 2,000, and now they're at 6 and going higher. And so the idea that this is all going to disappear,
how can it disappear? How can he even say that when there's 327 million people who have yet to be infected or testing positive? This is ridiculous.
Because it's magical thinking. I mean, that he's been saying that ever since it started. I mean, he said it initially, there's only one person from China. Well. There's only 15 people here, and they're all going to get under control. Then it's going to go down when it warms up in April. It'll go away. It'll magically go away, or miraculously go away, I think is the term to use. And then Pence was going to say, well, we don't see a second wave. Of course, he was saying that in the summer. Nobody was predicting a second wave in the summer. They were all predicting the wave in the fall. Now it's the fall. The wave started. Pence isn't talking about it at all. But Trump had always said that it's just going to go away magically or miraculously. And the problem is, just as you said, it's at the highest level that it's ever been in the United States. There's never been a day that reported 80,000 cases prior to today. And it's by no means peaked out nobody is saying that there's going to be fewer cases next week. In fact, a paper just came out today in Nature Medicine, and this was by the group, the University of Washington, that's been making the predictions that the administration used to use when the predictions weren't that high. I mean, this is the group that originally said that if there was no mitigation, that there'd be 1 or 2 million cases, and if there was mitigation, they could cut it down to 100 or 200,000. And Trump started using those numbers and talked about how, you know, he thought it would be below 100,000, saying he didn't think it'd get above 50,000 when it was 40,000, and you know, it was up to 50,000 within a week or so after he said it wouldn't get to 50. Then he raised it to 60 and 70. Then he said, well, maybe it'll get up to 100,000, but he doesn't think so. And then he gradually got up to 100,000, and he just stopped talking about the total. he switched over to another lie. The lie was the frequency. He said, it doesn't affect hardly anybody. You know, you have to be old and have a heart condition. And that, younger people, it was a tenth of 1% that gets affected. And then for the general population, it was less than 1%. And those are, just absurd numbers. I mean, the numbers are significantly higher than that. You can see the number of dead people, and you should consider a person that dies as being affected, and that's well above 1%. And you can look at the numbers. The numbers are actually higher than reported. The excess deaths, the number of cases that are reported, there's another paper that just came out, and that paper indicated that the number of excess deaths in the U.S. through I think a couple of months ago, when the number was around 200,000 confirmed cases, the number of excess deaths in the U.S. was 300,000. So there was an extra 100,000 that had died. Some of them may have been from people being afraid to go in the hospital and not getting routine exams, and ended up getting sick and dying because they just weren't getting medical care. There could have been other things like people are home, they're opioids are creating, you know, higher deaths because people are at home longer, you know, more frequently because of lockdowns previously. But that's got 300,000. But the report that came out in Nature Medicine today, again, was from the group in Washington, and they projected that there will be 500,000 deaths by the end of February. So they're essentially saying that between now and the end of February, right now there's about 225,000 deaths, and they're saying it'll go up to 500,000. So they're saying another 275,000 will die by the end of February. And frankly, I think that's an optimistic report. If you kind of go through the numbers, that's projecting that there'll be a little over 2,000 deaths per day on average. Mm-hmm. The deaths typically go down on weekends, and so that means that, and it's not at 2,000 yet, it's really closer to 1,000. So it'll take a little while to go from 1,000 to 2,000. So to average 2,000 means that, you know, there'll be days that will have 3,000 or 4,000 deaths. And 3,000 deaths is a 9/11. So you can have a 9/11 every day for a month or two, you know, when we get to the winter. And
what is your projection, Henry, on the curve? Let's take it through the winter. Just increase, and then will there be a seasonal adjustment in the spring, or maybe not? What do you think?
No, I think it'll have a seasonal pattern because the driver really has to do with behavior and contacts. That I think usually when the numbers start getting real high and people realize there's a major problem here, and they're basically told, well, you know, all you can really do is follow the guidelines, is to wear a mask and to socially distance and to wash your hands and to limit your exposure. And people will start doing that because they basically don't want to die. I mean, that's the reason Trump is having the problems he's having, is with the elderly population. He's just, you know, kind of disregarding all of the medical advice other than, you know, Scott Atlas, the retired radiologist. He's got no background.
That's Dr. You. Dr. Scott Atlas.
Yeah, Dr. Scott Atlas, the expertise is looking at MRIs of neurological patients. Yeah,
I like your line that he's the grandson.
The son, right?
grandson,
no,
whatever.
I think he can be the son. I think Scott was born in, how old is he? I think he's like early 60s or so. And Charles is probably 20, 30 years older than that, maybe a little bit older. Yeah, maybe 40 years. So maybe a grandson instead of a son. But anyway, I don't know that he's done bodybuilding or weightlifting, but he certainly hasn't done virology or epidemiology. I can assure you of that. It is herd, you know, immunity is not something that's backed by scientists in the field. They kind of roll their eyes and say, you know, you're going to have millions dead before you get the herd immunity. And there's no guarantees that the herd immunity will last for any length of time. Yeah, so I'm anticipating that the curve will start dropping, in part because people will start being concerned and they'll change their behavior and they'll wear masks and they'll limit their exposures and kind of like what happened in the Northeast with New York. I mean, New York had a huge spike, and so did New Jersey. And I mean, it spread to Connecticut, and again, it kind of even got to Massachusetts and went further south to eastern PA. And with the high number of cases and the ICUs filling up, the people did wear masks. They did pay attention to where they were going and tried to limit their exposure. And the virus got under control, and it's been under control until the last several weeks. And now the numbers are creeping back up. The number in New York was 1,600 today. New Jersey got above 1,000. They got up to 1,045. Massachusetts got close. They got to 986. And these three states, you know, had very low numbers prior to the last couple of weeks or so. New York cracked 1,000 a couple of weeks ago for the first time. New Jersey did it like last week, and Massachusetts hasn't even done it yet. I mean, they were 900 today. Yesterday, they were only 600, and they were 800 the day before. So they haven't really cracked 1,000 yet. I think you can rest assured that by next week they will. And but they were able to get the numbers down. They kept them down for quite some time, and now they're starting to creep back up. And part of that just has to do with the virus level in the country. That, you know, like I mentioned, Pennsylvania has got up to they were 2,200 today. They were 2,000 yesterday. They were 1,800 the day before. All of those are highs for, you know, recent, you know, they hadn't been that high since back in April. So the numbers dropped down and they stayed down, and now they're getting back up to these, more concerning level. The part of the reason I was using 1,000 was that that's a decent number. And if it doubles, all of a sudden it's 2,000. And then, you know, if it doubles again, it's at 4,000. That's a significant number for a daily increase. And unfortunately, as you can see from the list, it's not that uncommon today to get 80. You know, I mean, it's hard to get 80,000 cases. You know, there's only 50 states. So, you know, 80,000 means you got to be around 1,500 on an average. And a lot of these states are smaller. So, you know, like North and South Dakota, even though they've got the highest rate in the world, they're both below 1,000. They're closer to 700-800 cases a day. So the number is high. I think it will come down as people start to pay more attention. I don't think they're not there yet. And I think that, you know, we'll see what happens for Thanksgiving. The airlines have already said, oh, it's not a problem to fly. We're starting to book our flights, you know, full. We're using the center seat. We're not keeping that empty anymore. That is no more dangerous flying than it is riding a bicycle, I think was the comparison they used, that they haven't really had that many cases, and they're good to go. And so there is, you know, some serious issues still. There's the governor in North Dakota said, oh, they're not going to do anything about masks because people won't wear them anyway. And I mean, the best example of the mask really came from the debate. I don't know if you heard the debate yesterday, but, you know, Trump was saying, oh, I don't have a problem with masks. You know, it's okay. We hand them out at our rallies. And then he said the key phrase, he said, yeah, you can see how many are wearing masks in the people behind me. And It was the behind me that was the clue. And the clue is that the people behind him are the people that are going to be on camera. the cameras are going to be filming Trump, and they want to see who's sitting behind him. And so they hand out masks to those people. And so if you're going to sit behind the president, they give you the mask. They say Trump on the mask, and they want you to wear the mask. And most of them do wear the mask. So if you take a picture at the rally, the group that's you know, closest to Trump, that are sitting right behind him in the film, a reasonably high percentage of those people wear masks. And then if the camera pans around and you get a shot at the people Trump is looking at, virtually none of them are wearing a mask. And so he can get his followers to wear masks if he wants to, and he does it at the rally, but he only does it for the ones that are on camera. He doesn't really care about the other ones that aren't on camera. He just wants them to be packed in there so that he can he can draw a crowd. And he is, you know, just a super spreader, a traveling super spreader event. I mean, there's cases that have been documented. I mean, we had Herman Cain died and he went to Tulsa. But there have been cases, clusters of cases in people that have attended the rallies. And today he went and had a rally in Florida at the Villages. And this is a retirement community. These are golfers who are one of the largest retirement communities in the country, maybe the world. I don't know what it is. Some ridiculous number. It's, you know, 50,000 people, 100,000 people, some large concentration of people that are at this community. It's got a bunch of different golf courses. They're the ones that are riding around on golf course carts and having, you know, shouting matches between the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump. But in any event, they were at his rally today. And they had red hats on, but they didn't have any masks on, at least the ones in the front. And Florida is, you know, back up to, 6,000 cases a day now. So the numbers are going up in Florida. There's cases in this community. The Villages are not immune. They've had outbreaks there. They've got ongoing outbreaks there. And and he's scheduling rallies, and he's only giving out masks to the ones that are on camera, which is, you know, a pretty small percentage of the total. I mean, he doesn't care about the ones that are on camera that are being filmed from the back. He can't see. They're not wearing masks. He's more worried about the ones that are facing the camera, and he gives masks out, and they wear them. And he put out his schedule. He's going to be doing two or three a day till the election. And he's going to battleground states, which include some of the states with the largest outbreak. I mean, one of the more glaring one is Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got, you know, they're running out of ICUs. They're booked full. And he's going to Wisconsin and holding rallies in the midst of a exploding pandemic. And it's not just going to be exploding in Wisconsin. It's starting to take off, and it's going to be in,
the old expression, well, it takes two to tango. How do we assess and analyze all those tens of thousands who are going to these rallies? They know the drill. They understand that they're potentially exposing themselves to an infectious organism. What about those people? What's going through their minds? Do they believe it's not infectious? They just simply don't believe it. They think
that this is, some of them will say that the pandemic will end November 4th. They think that this is just a lot of hype by the media. It's really no different than the flu. It's not a big deal. And, if you're going to get it, you're going to get it. You know, they're not epidemiologists. They listen to people to say, this is overblown. The cases, if you have a motorcycle accident and you die from the accident.
Well, that happened one time.
They're getting a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it works. Is these are all anecdotal stories. You got one example here and you've got one example there. They ignored the fact that there's been 300,000 excessive deaths. And the 300,000 excessive deaths happened right when the pandemic happened. And in the states that had the initial outbreaks are the ones that have the... the excess deaths. I mean, you heard the stories about the ambulances in New York and that they had all these cases that basically died when they got there. They had heart attacks and they had died and they don't take them to the hospital and they don't test them. And they just, basically take them to the morgue or the crematorium. And that's the end of it. And some of them say COVID on the death certificates, and eventually they got around to putting them into the probable category that either the autopsy or the coroner went and said that they had COVID symptoms, and by the time the EMS arrived, they were dead or they died on the way to the hospital. And they didn't take them to the hospital. They were dead. So they basically wanted to limit the exposure, and they took them to the morgue or to the funeral home or wherever. So the point is that there's enough out there of people saying this isn't real. It's not a big deal. I mean, Trump said it. he says it both at his interview on 60 Minutes. And he says it at the debate, and he said it previously. He says that people aren't really affected by the disease. And his favorite two numbers are that younger people is 0.1%, and older people is 1%, less than 1%. So he say that less than 1% of the people that get infected with the virus end up being affected by it. He doesn't even say dies. He says are affected by it. And so is fans listen to this and they say, 99% chance that nothing bad's going to happen if I get infected. And, it's kind of like the flu, and I don't worry that much about the flu. And, if you get infected, you get infected. And they go to the rallies.
Okay. What do we know about the current death rate of infected people? Where are we? You were saying that it's going to be there's a delay.
About 10 or 15% of the people that are infected end up going to the hospital. You know, the ones mm-hmm. that die are somewhat age dependent. They're somewhat dependent upon underlying conditions. You know, there's a lot of conditions that the fall into the underlying
condition.
We've got
a sick society to begin with. A lot of sick people. Yep.
Well, it's not just sick. I mean, you can just be overweight. I mean, the basically
I include
obesity
that.
Is an underlying
I include
condition.
That as a sickness in my
pregnancy is an underlying condition. Asthma is an underlying condition. I mean, there's a lot of conditions and you know, some of the diseases that the more elderly will have, like diabetes or high blood pressure, are all underlying conditions. So, you know, some are sicker than others, but, you know, there's a lot of conditions that put you in an underlying condition category. But the spread, it follows, you know, a cycle that initially a lot of this spread is by younger people. And these are people that are either going back to school or people that are going to bars. And they're basically getting infected, and they initially infect other younger people, and that's who their contact is. And then eventually that ends up spreading into family members that tend to be older, and then those older family members end up going to the hospitals at a higher frequency.
Mm-hmm.
The death toll in the hospitals are somewhat improved, that physicians, you know, have a little better understanding of the disease and what works and what doesn't work. And I think, you know, they put patients on their stomachs, they do better than if they're on their back. If they can hold off on ventilators, they do better putting them on the ventilator. Sometimes, you know,
at one point there was an alleged 80% fatality rate if you went on a vent. I don't know what that is today, but that was early.
And part of that is because it's tricky and you have to pretty much calibrate things. You know, the ventilators have a lot of controls as to, you know, what rate it's giving the oxygen, and you kind of monitor and you kind of customize it. And if they're overwhelmed and the technicians that are involved with that have too many cases and they can't really spend a lot of time with one patient because they got three more that just came in the door, then they don't have as good a success rate. They can't give them the attention they need. Well, it's not just a mistake. They just don't have time to sit there for a half an hour or 45 minutes and adjust the controls for this patient and ignore all the other patients that are coming in the door. When they're not overwhelmed, they have the time to devote to getting the person set up. But if they have this big influx of cases, they they don't have the time. And what's happening now is you kind of have this situation where you're in these rural areas, and the rural areas don't have the same, you know, medical centers. In the bigger cities, they've got teaching hospitals there. They got lots of medical schools, and so they've got a reasonable, you know, population. They can kind of take the fourth year students and get them to kind of get more hands-on activity than they might normally do, or educate, you know, graduate them, move them up a couple months early if they're towards the end of their fourth year or whatever. So they got more flexibility and they can handle surges, whereas at rural areas, they can fill up their hospitals a lot quicker. And then if it's starting to show up all over the place, the cities that normally could take them, they get filled up and that ends up getting backed up also. So the success rate is a little bit better. You know, the fatality rate's lower for younger patients. Remdesivir just got approved, so it's moved beyond the emergency use, and so that's an approved treatment
right.
for COVID. As far as the vaccines have come back online. There was a hold on AstraZeneca. AstraZeneca is back in business. They're able to start recruiting again. And the group in England is back in business in the U.S. also. They never really figured out what the event was, you know, whether it really was this, neurological condition they've seen before. They kind of were, left it open as to exactly what the diagnosis was, but they have to update their, form for volunteers and say there was another event. And that it was similar to the earlier one, then it was neurological, you know, this transverse, whatever, myelitis. And that's what it kind of resembled, but they can't say for sure that's what it was, but it is a concern. And so they got that and they've started up the trial again. I still think that if they get another similar case, that they'll be in big trouble.
I would think.
Johnson & Johnson got to start up again. They had stopped their trial. Apparently a patient had suffered a stroke, and I guess they gonna give out that warning, and they're not sure if that was because of the vaccine or not. But
they missed their opening, Henry. They need to come up with a vaccine to prevent strokes, you see. They're missing their chance here.
Yeah, well, they may be coming up with one that causes strokes, unfortunately. So those issues are still there. They are back in place. I mean, one possibility, everything's risk-reward. And, if these numbers start to explode, then, they may, say, well, we need to do something. And, there have been some adverse effects, but most of the patients seem to do okay. And if they don't basically get vaccinated, they're going to get the virus. Or if they get the virus, they've got a better chance of having problems or dying than they would a side effect from the vaccine that's still under study. And, I don't know. Right now, they're kind of going through the routine and having the board that oversees it and going through the data and coming to conclusions. Although the conclusions sound like they're not very definitive, so they're just kind of listing this as another issue. So right now, I think the timelines are fairly similar. That I don't think that there's an expectation that there's going to be a approval in the next 11 days. That
No way.
The latest I heard was that maybe end of November, sometime in December, the approval will come through. It may not be an approval. It may be another emergency use so that they can, use it limitedly.
Compassionate use, whatever.
The first responders, et cetera,
Gotcha.
Are higher
emergency.
Risk.
What about the Russian Sputnik V vax? What do you know? Any inside information on that? It seems to be doing well so far. It seems to.
I haven't heard anything. I know initially they kind of said it was approved, but they had only given it to like 100 people or so. And so I'm sure that by now they've expanded that. And whether it's been long enough, a lot of this comes down to recruiting and who they're recruiting initially. They're more likely for a trial to initially recruit healthier people. They want to get off on a good footing. They don't want to have a lot of people failing the vaccine. So they'll start with a healthier population, and then they'll end up expanding it if things go well initially. So you might not really see, you know, adverse effects at the beginning because they're trying to show that the vaccine works, and that they would be happy if it works on healthy people, and then expand that to more high risk people, older people. But the disadvantage of that is that to know that it's working, that they have to have people in the placebo, you know, getting the disease versus the ones that get the vaccine don't. And if they use younger people, the people that get the disease may do relatively well, even if they've got the placebo, because they're relatively healthy, and therefore to show the benefit.
It's a very tricky process. It can't be rushed.
It's more difficult, because most of the people do survive or don't even get hospitalized, and that's the reason. You know, this whole thing about hydroxychloroquine, I mentioned that, you can't really tell from anecdotal data, because most of the people, even the elderly people, most people don't end up in the hospital. I mean, it's 10-15%. So that means that, 85-90% end up, recovering on their own without anything. And so say that you gave them a drug and they did well, you give them a placebo and they'll do well, on a result percentage. The only way you're going to know is to do a randomized control where you've got, double blind, so that nobody knows who's got what until you break the code and identify who got the vaccine and who got the placebo, that there's a statistical difference. So, but
all right.
But what I'm anticipating is that, in the interim, while these trials are ongoing, and the remdesivir is mostly for more severe cases, but it really its benefit is reducing the hospital time. I don't think it's really been shown to decrease the death toll. The dexamethasone is the only medication that's had promise there. So that's helped a little bit with the death rate. The infection rate is high, is probably going to get higher, on the short term going to require changes in behavior. Without the changes in behavior, the virus is, go from person to person. And I anticipate that the record set today will be broken next week. It might be broken on a daily basis starting on Tuesday or Wednesday or so. The numbers tend to be a little bit higher towards the end of the week than the beginning of the week. In part because of the weekend, but I don't really see this slowing down anytime soon. The conditions are ripe for spread of the virus, behaviors ripe for spread of the virus, and the virus is trying to spread. And exactly how big this current wave is going to be is really a little bit hard to predict. It'll be easier to predict after another week or two and see if it's just, taking off throughout the country. But that's what was expected. What was expected is the Herald wave will be spot, and then it'll be much broader when the real wave hits, which is what it looks like is beginning. So,
all right.
We'll give it a
very good summation.
So.
Thanks. We'll talk next week. Thank you, Henry. Be well.
Okay. Take care.
Take
Have
care.
A good weekend. Take care.
Thank you. Dr. Henry Nyman, okay, and we will be right back with hour number 3. We're going to talk to the wild man of Las Vegas, Mr. John Barber, next.